welcome to this fifth class in a series of six. Today, the primary focus is on vulnerability and our persona. I just wanted to name the topic for right now. I'm aware of, and I'm thinking that whenever I prepare for a class like this or any class, I realize that speaking about a topic, even sharing one's experience, is one thing. And in my awareness, everything that I speak or make reference to or share, whether it's my experience or not, I'm aware that it is not the experience itself per se, but that it points to something. It points to an experiential territory, if you will. And so I know that there's a built-in challenge to this because some people grapple with the words or the thoughts and may have different associations with it. So that I ask you to hold it lightly, that if there are any words or thoughts or concepts or even experiences that are conveyed by me or someone else, and to realize that if you have any difficulty or confusion or you don't understand it or doesn't fit your experience, just to understand that in my view, that's part of the process. Just to recognize that I think that this is a very challenging and it points to more vulnerability. It's a very challenging process, the whole notion of having a class like this, because I think it points to something very, very subtle and very sensitive within our inner experience. And it's not always easy to get to, and I think this will be a part of the topic today. So having said that, I'd like to invite everybody to do a very short opening meditation as a way of becoming more present to your inner experience and to yourself right now. So if you will, if you would take a minute to close your eyes and slow your breathing down. And just allow yourself to be with whatever it is that is in your feeling, your experiencing, your sensing. Simply to be with it. Allow it to be in your system, no matter how pleasant or unpleasant it is. Just allow it. There's a form of care, self-care, when we can attend to, that means bring simple awareness and attention to our feeling and sensing. So bring your attention, attend to your inner experiencing. Just feel the simple existence of your bodily presence. And then in line with our purpose today, our focus today, in your inner awareness, in your feeling state, notice two possible dimensions of experiences. And this is to take note, just to notice. Notice if there is in your feeling awareness, in your consciousness, a sense of guardedness, a sense of holding in, feeling energetically, anxiety maybe, fear, concern, any energetic holding in. Just notice if it's there. And what it feels like. And as you bring your attention to any sense of holding or guardedness, also, perhaps on the very edge or the subtle interior of the guardedness, notice if there's any vulnerability, something softer, warmer. something that's moving, perhaps trembling. There's another dimension to our being. We often just need to slow down, to really pause, and then pause in our pausing, to allow the subtle, the ever-present life force in us be gentle with your breathing. Sense there is a presence of life in you, outside of you, everywhere. And as you are in this open interior awareness, whether you're guarded or vulnerable, open or closed, I'm going to share a reading by Brené Brown, who has done a lot of work on vulnerability. She says, "We cultivate love when we allow our most vulnerable and powerful selves to be deeply seen and known. And when we honor the spiritual connection that grows from that offering with trust, respect, kindness, and affection. Love is not something we give or get. It is something that we nurture and grow. A connection that can only be cultivated between two people when it exists within each one of them. We can only love others as much as we love ourselves. Shame, blame, disrespect, betrayal, and the withholding of affection damage the roots from which love grows. Love can only survive these injuries if they are acknowledged and healed." Just allow the meditation in this reading to be felt within you. So, in this class today, we will explore, by my sharing, and in the experiential exercises I'm going to guide you in, an inquiry, a non-conceptual experiential inquiry into persona and vulnerability. In this inquiry, I'm going to share my understanding of what is a persona, what do you mean by that, and what do you mean by vulnerability. This is an invitation to develop some clarity about what these two terms refer to in each of us. I think I'll just start by sharing an experience of mine rather than the conceptual notions of what these are about, even though I will share those. This morning as I was preparing, and even last night as I was preparing to do this class, I noticed that I had something going on in my experience, and I could register it as uncomfortable. That's the first recognition. I'm uncomfortable with regard to doing this class. Actually, it was definitely related to doing this. And then I noticed the discomfort. And it actually was surprising because I haven't had this kind of a feeling for a long time, actually, and not this strong. And it was a very familiar feeling. And if I were to, on the very surface, enter into the experience, there was a resistance, I could call. There was a resistance in me, an energy that I interpreted as, I don't want to do this class. I don't want to do it. Just, it was that simple. There was some resistance, and it was really uncomfortable. I also sensed that the energy of it was one that I could interpret as a kind of withdrawal, meaning the energy is saying, I don't want to engage, I want to pull in. And then I noticed it was a deeper pattern in me. It was more subtle. It wasn't very strong. But it was a deeper pattern in me that I recognized from a long time in my life, from as long as I can remember. And it was a pattern that I would characterize as depression. This depressive pattern in my life that I've worked with for so long, and that it has transformed and cleared and healed in so many ways, and yet it's here in this way and showed up in this way recently. And then what I did was that because it was uncomfortable, I noticed all the tendencies that I had in my mind to want to not feel it, to get away from it. This feeling, the experience, just did not want it. And I guess part of my mind says, I don't want the behavior, the action. I don't want to do this. And so it wasn't so much I was thinking that, but that was the feeling sense that was going on in me, the sense of withdrawing, sense of not wanting to engage. And then what I did was I actually sort of practiced what I teach. And I said, wow, why don't I do that? And so I felt into it. And what I noticed that every part of the reaction, every part of the story was what I don't want. It's what I don't want to do. It was focused on avoiding something. And then I shifted into this asking myself the question, what do I want? What is the do want? What do I long for? What is this energy really wanting? And as soon as I asked that question, something in me dissolved. Something softened. Something became warm. The energy softened and became warm. And it didn't have words, but there were words associated with what I do want. Was it had to do with a deep and nurturing and comforting, self-nurturing space. And it became very clear that it was an inner experience, an inner warmth, an inner peaceful self-replenishment, I think. And I think I can understand this in relationship to so much of my energy has been out, been extremely busy, very busy in a creative, engaged output. And I think that was part of my system wanting to balance itself. And so I follow this energy into what I do want. The energy wants replenishment, nurturing, a kind of comfort and warmth that looks like it's a form of retreating, but not avoiding, of going inward. And when I touched into this, something in me healed. The whole notion of my mind's interpretation of, well, I don't want to do this class, I don't feel like doing it, that totally dissolved. And there is, and the warmth that became, you have to understand that this, there's so much of this is a feeling state, not so much having words. But the words are the inherent meaning that's in the energy itself. And so it's still with me. This sense, this feeling is with me, even though I am present now. And as I share this, there is a sense of that warmth, that openness, that willingness that it's okay for me to want to be self-nurturing. There's a sense of, there is an experience of acceptance. And it completely has changed. And as I share this, I can say that there is a sense of transparency and vulnerability in what I'm sharing. Something softer, something more transparent, more of what's really going on. It has to do with my willingness to actually be honest and say that the part of my mind said that I don't feel like doing this, instead of, well, I should feel like doing it. And so this is just the outer edge of it for me. And just beginning to share for me what was a very real transformative experience that in many different forms I experience a lot in my life. And so I want to talk a little bit about vulnerability and persona, what that means. And as I'm talking, I'm hoping that it will help you connect in some way to your own experience, your own sense of what your persona is and what your vulnerability is. And if it does or it doesn't, I'd like to, once I spend a few minutes sharing this, would love to connect with some people to hear if it does resonate with you or how it does. And so I'm actually not sure where to start with persona or vulnerability. I'll just go back and forth. For me, the persona is a part of my identity that I put out, that I present. It's a kind of social presentation. It's what I put out to the world, to my relationships. And it's basically, in a very simple way, it's how I want to be seen. And essentially the persona, one of the ways to describe it is want to look good. I want to look mature. I want to be together, strong, not weak, spiritual. Now there's a reason why I want to look good. From the persona, from the perspective of the persona, I want to look good because I want to be accepted, because I want approval, actually. I want people to like me rather than dislike me. And so the persona creates strategies that help me keep safe, safe from perceived danger, safe from being vulnerable. I don't want to be hurt. The persona says, I don't want to be hurt. I don't want the pain of hurt feelings, the pain of disapproval or non-acceptance. So the persona creates strategies in my life to help me create and maintain this kind of safety. Now, one of the origins of the persona, in my understanding, is when I go through life experiences, particularly the foundational life experiences early in my life, those life experiences that created the original sort of hurt and patterns of emotional wounding that still are carried with me. When I remember going through these experiences in my earlier life, I remember making the decisions. And I think that the decision that I make are, I don't want to be hurt anymore, so I'm going to create the persona. And I don't say that consciously. It's not a conscious decision. But for me, my persona, when I was very young, I remember it came out as, I want to be good. I want to be a good boy. I want to follow the rules. I don't want to make anybody angry or upset because it's dangerous. Because if I do make somebody angry or upset, I'll feel pain and hurt when somebody is angry or disapproving. Or I might even turn to myself in anger or the disapproval judging myself harshly. So the persona is the outer layer of that which I am guarded or protecting myself. And what I'm protecting myself against, I think it's usually a very unconscious thing, but sometimes consciously, is the sense that I'm going to feel pain. And what is this pain? There is, internally, I believe we all have this sense of our own feeling zones within ourselves. The feeling zone where we do feel vulnerable. And in the vulnerability, there are areas of painful, raw feelings, but it also allows the other feelings of joy and love. Now, I want to say that there's a confusion around the word vulnerability that stems from these life-limiting interpretations of the word, and I think that it's part of our conventional thinking, that if I'm vulnerable, then I'm open to attack, and it would be stupid of me to be open to attack, to be open to threat. And this interpretation, I think, comes from primarily a life alienating thinking, that life is dangerous. But from a life-serving, a life-enriching context, for me, vulnerability is how I hold my own internal experience to myself. It's not so much that my inner experience is open to others, but how am I open to my own awareness, my own living energy? So given the life experiences that we've developed in our conditioning, in our life experiences, we tend to develop this sense of protection that takes the form of a frozen fear. And we close ourselves off from our own experience. There's a protective shell that we protect our own inner feeling. When we are able to approach ourselves with enough compassion, then that protective shell tends to soften. As it softens, it becomes more alive. And very often there's a sense of sadness in this. Not always, but sometimes there is. Is the loosening of that protective shell is really very often a form of frozen sadness as well. And so for me, vulnerability is about, I'm open, not necessarily to the outside, but I'm open to my own inner life force. I'm open to the mystery of not knowing. When I'm open to that, I'm willing to trust. And that trusting for me allows me to have a deep kind of relaxation. So the conventional understanding of vulnerable looks like, well, I'm protecting myself from others, from being hurt by others. But my experience is I'm actually protecting myself from my own life energy in the company of others. It has little to do with others primarily. So even in relation to those that I view as harsh or hard-edged, it is still possible to stay open to my own life energy, my own vulnerability, even those who are expressing anger. I do want to make a distinction that if I'm fearful and protecting myself about perceived danger to my physical well-being or someone else's physical well-being, that is something I accept. It's a slightly different category. But to be emotionally protective is very different. There's a tendency to want to rise above my own reactive feelings, to be aware of any blockage. So here's the questions I ask myself. Can I allow myself to feel into whatever feeling I have, fear or anger, to be vulnerable and alive with the life feeling that's held inside my anger? Can I be aware of my interpretation, my story that I'm telling myself? Can I be open and drop into the feelings that are underneath the thinking and the judgment? So these are some of the notions, my own experience of vulnerability. And then the notion of persona. The persona is, when I look deeply into it, is always wants to be seen a certain way. So part of this class is an invitation for each of you to examine experientially the notion of what is your persona, to ask yourself this. I'm going to repeat these questions later on in the exercise. How does it operate in your life? How does your protective tendencies? How do you want to look good? How do you want to look so that you're accepted, so that you seem to be the kind of person you want to be seen as? And then, what is your vulnerability? Is there some sense of vulnerable pain or openness or something that you're trying to protect? So these are some of the primary focus of this class today. And I would like to pause and ask for any resonance. Anybody has questions for clarity, resonating with the experience of anything that I've shared this morning?
Well, I missed the very few minutes of the call, but I heard that you were talking about holding or withholding. And so then as you were talking, I thought to myself, what is it that I do when I'm holding like that? And pretending was the word that came to my mind. So then it was really interesting that you went on to persona, because that to me is, it's when I'm pretending. I'm pretending to be somebody that I'm not.
Yeah, thank you for that. I feel happy hearing that self-recognition. That for me, my belief that if you and others and we all can realize, this is, I'm hearing you say, this is what I do, I pretend. I'm hearing that you pretend so that maybe you're accepted or approved of.
Mm-hmm.
Do you sense that?
After a while, I forget that I'm pretending.
Yeah. And it almost is, though, is it you forget that you're pretending, that you do it so automatically that you convince yourself of pretending becomes the norm.
Mm-hmm.
It becomes your reality, and you forget that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that.
Robert, your honesty and courage really is so touching and so freeing. To model that means so much. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate hearing that.
Robert, I just wanted to acknowledge that your insight about depression was really resonant for me. The idea that withdrawing to nurture yourself really helped me understand those periods in my life where I also was facing what that was all about. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
I'm impressed by linking not wanting to do something and depression and self-nurturance. And I would love to hear more about that. I know that I'm distinctly challenged to nurture myself.
Yeah. Yeah. In other words, when you think about nurturing yourself, when you say challenged, I'm guessing that something comes up in you that fights it or resists the notion of nurturing yourself. Is that accurate?
I'm not sure I know how to nurture myself.
Okay. I'm not going to spend a lot of time. I just want to give you a couple of cues here. For me, there are two forms of self-nurturing or self-care. One is outer self-care or self-nurturing, which I think is the most commonly understood form of self-care. You know, self-care, I'm going to stay home and rest. I'm going to read a book, get a massage, go to a hot tub, take some time off. Those are behavioral forms of self-care. And then there's, for me, the foundation of outer self-care is inner self-care. And for me, it's the most important. Because I can engage in outer self-care by engaging in those activities and still have an internal state of distress, an internal state of disconnection that the outer self-care just doesn't seem to touch. It might give me some temporary relief, but the heart of self-care for me is the inner self-care, where I can really touch into those places in me where I'm afraid, where I'm avoiding, where I'm harsh with myself, and just begin to approach those inner experiences in a really different way. I just wanted to say at least this one thing and see if it makes any difference in hearing it.
Well, I thank you for that clarity, and I'm realizing in this moment that when I get somewhat close to those internal things, I get terrified.
Yeah, and so when you get terrified, it's an inner experience of what you call fear.
And I don't want to go there. It brings somehow or other, obviously it's not true, but it brings up life-threatening something or other.
Yeah. Yeah, and this is the basic pattern, I think, that I believe is almost universal, if it's not universal in us, in human beings. This is inner part of us that we just don't want to go there because it touches this very primal fear of existence, that we'll die or something horrible will happen. So just to name that right now, I think some of these practices, the practices that we've engaged in for this entire class, really are addressing this very dynamic that you just described.
Thank you very much.
Sure. You're welcome.
Thank you for that. I was noticing when Ricky was sharing about the pretending to be who she isn't. For me, it's about pretending not to feel what I feel so that others can feel, I imagine that it makes others feel more safe and at ease with me.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you. In saying this, I'm just sensing that there's something really, really important, really valuable, just in being able to say it, to recognize it, and to say it out loud. Is there something in you that how you feel, just this recognition? And that here's the space where you can actually say it.
It makes me want to cry. There's this release. There is a holding in that, even though I'm not normally aware of it, but it is a contraction to pretend not to feel.
There is an analysis, I think, that's accurate, but it's not important. I think that this experience that you've had from the time you were very young, mm-hmm. and that when you expressed what you felt when you were very young, you were judged or hurt. But what's more important is that you can touch it now. The sadness that I'm sensing in you is, does you feel like there's a loss of something, a mourning in not being able to just be honest and transparent with how you really feel instead of holding it in?
It's a hardening of the heart that can happen.
The pretending not to feel is a crust, a protective shell hardening around the heart. And in our conversation so far, you're sharing this morning, I'm sensing that as it begin to soften a little bit in your sadness and in the tears, you feel some softening of what you want is to not pretend. You want to be authentic.
I do, and then the fear comes up that I will scare everyone away.
Yeah. And I think that's a very important fear, both of them, to pay attention to. The recognition that you're pretending not to feel, and that if you do feel, you're scared that you'll scare someone else away. They'll scare everyone away. And if you scared someone away, why is that scary?
I'll be alone.
So for me, that's the core. Then you'll be alone. And the price you pay to not be alone is pretending not to feel, and the hardening of your heart. I sense perhaps a sadness in what you lose by not being alone.
And it's like I'm going away from myself.
Yes.
And that's the most important person, not have to go away.
Well, it's not only that. I think your realization is very important. But when you pretend to not feel. It doesn't allow you to be intimate with the others. They might be physically present, but you're not emotionally present. So they may be physically present to you, but you're not present. How can you be honest and intimate with someone? And I don't mean intimate in the sense of having an intimate man-woman relationship or even a deep friendship. I mean just simple, relaxed honesty with another human being.
I do have that sometimes, but normally the people that I really want in my life the most, that I do it less with, so it's kind of...
So again, I'm really happy to hear this awareness, and this recognition I think is so valuable in this exploration. So I appreciate your being willing to touch into it and to share this, and then also to stay in this class and perhaps afterwards, that just to stay with the awareness, to bring clarity so you don't forget it, that you're pretending not to feel, and that there's a longing. Do you feel a longing? And what would you say that longing is?
Just let my heart be so open that I just simply say what is, or let myself feel it in the moment and let it manifest however it does.
And I'm guessing that if you are able to actually be honest and transparent with what your heart is actually feeling, that there's also a part of you that cares about other people and can do so with kindness and consideration. Great. Thank you.
Yeah, I wanted to thank you for that understanding around the protective shell being sadness, a form of frozen sadness. When I left a very traumatic environment, I had so much sadness and still am grieving very, very deeply. And my guidance was just to stay with it. And now I understand why.
Could you share a little bit more of the why? The grieving, I'm guessing, was something very important for you to allow yourself to feel. Is that it?
I was receiving guidance that this grieving would open up more receptivity within myself. And I didn't understand that at the time because I thought, oh, this grief is just going on endlessly. What is it opening me up into?
Yeah.
And there was and is apparently so much guardedness that I needed to build up to protect myself in this situation where there was a tremendous amount of violence and abuse. That it was only until I left that situation and that environment that I could actually feel the wall and start to connect with what the wall is made of and allow it to melt through grieving.
Yes, great. Thank you. That seems very clear, your experience does. My experience in my own inner process is that the outer edge of the protection is fear. It's a holding. It's a protection. It's I don't want to feel something painful. But right underneath it, is the sadness. Right underneath is the softer, vulnerable, warmer feeling of sadness. That for me is, it's as though there's these passageways, there's these something that are open, a clarity, a volume of something, that there's more capacity for a flow when I allow myself to feel the sadness. There's sadness in and of itself isn't an end or a goal. It's the quality of it that allows the open receptivity to the life force, to the life flow, in the form of love and in the form of, it's as though there's something that doesn't have words, but that is registered in my being as a trembling, that the world is a trembling force, if I can open to it. This is a practice. Thank you. Okay, so what I'd like to do is to do a whole group guiding, and then I'm going to ask you to break into pairs to have a more extensive exercise into this. At least that's what I have in mind right now. It might change as I start the process. I usually do this in workshops in small groups. It's a, what I call a persona and vulnerability exercise. If you don't have the handout, then I'm hoping you can have a pen and paper to take a few notes here about some of the steps. So what I'm going to ask everyone to engage in right now is a sort of a self-exercise as I ask the question. So the first question is to become aware of some of the behaviors, maybe the attitudes, the viewpoints, the strategies that you engage in to support being seen the way you want. And that can be, this is what I present. This is what I'm showing, the persona. How does this operate? In other words, you ask yourself, what is my persona? What am I presenting? how do I want to be seen? The first thing to look at is, what are your behaviors, your attitudes, the strategies that you engage in to support being seen the way you want? As you do that, you're asking yourself, what is my persona? In other words, how do I want to be seen? Do I want to be seen as strong and not weak, mature? Do I want to be seen as caring? You know, a caring person doesn't say, screw you, you know, doesn't express their anger or whatever. Do you want to be seen as mature? In other words, articulate, how does it operate in your life? Can you be aware of this? And identify maybe two or three aspects of your persona. So you just take a minute to do that, everybody. You're going to have more time. This is like a preliminary process so that when you get into work with your partner, this is what you're going to share, be sharing and exploring more deeply. Okay, now I'm going to go into the second part of the exercise, which is about your vulnerability. The part is the openness, the part that when you're not guarded, when you're more open, you're more willing to be transparent. Now remember, this is primarily your vulnerability to your own inner feeling. Can you be vulnerable to yourself and then open in relationship? So one definition of vulnerability is a willingness and capacity to experience and express, means to bring forth, what is authentically present within you, especially painful, tender, raw, and or full, joyful, alive feelings right before the moment of defending or protecting. I'm going to repeat that. So I'm asking you to explore this, your own vulnerability, defined as the willingness and capacity to experience and express, that is, bring forth, what is authentically present within you, especially painful, tender, raw, and or full, joyful, alive feelings right before the moment of defending or protecting, or instead of defending or protecting. So part of the question is, once you sense and feel into this part of your experiencing, you can ask yourself the question, what is it that you are trying to protect in you? Do you have a sense of this? I think it was, if I can track the person who was sharing, you're pretending not to feel so that you won't upset other people. And what happens if you upset other people? Oh, then you'll be alone. Then she'll be alone. So that's essentially part of what I heard that she was protecting. And then, what is the nature of your heart? It was love. She just wants love. So it's these two dimensions, these two stages of this experience that I'm going to ask you to explore. And Stephanie has divided you into pairs. I would like you to take the time to really explore this. I guess you can begin. Thank you all for taking the time to do this exercise with each other. So I am eager and open to harvest your experience that you had in this exercise and any part of the class previous to this. I truly want to support your experience in the exercise and in this whole class, so I'd like to invite responses and sharing of any kind. Would you like to go ahead?
Hi, Robert. We had a really wonderful sharing experience, and we had a lot in common. Already having started on a journey of letting go of our old persona, started to be real. One thing came up that I said I would ask you, because it's kind of confusing, and part of my it's still current, is the need to look physically perfect. I'm getting old, and I long to accept myself as an old woman, and I want to accept it. We both recognize that there is such pressure. Don't know where to go from there.
Okay. It sounds like you're wanting to have more clarity or more a deeper understanding in this part of you. You said, well, the need for acceptance. in relationship to your age or what you look like as your age, in your age. Is that accurate?
Yes.
To be able to be yourself.
Not worry.
Yeah. So I'm just guessing that there are different levels or different dimensions of this experience, and one you've already named is that I think that there are certain expectations or demands or judgments that are built into the culture. And you can call it different things like ageism, and people who are older that look a certain way are judged in some way, that it's not acceptable or it's not attractive. And these judgments exist in the culture. I mean, you see it everywhere. You know, you see it in movies and television and magazines and the popular media, and even in everyday relationships, that somehow it's, you don't want to get old, you know, you want to get a facelift, you want to do everything that, anything that, you know, uh-oh, there's a wrinkle there, oh, now there's a whole bunch of wrinkles, oh my God, what's life coming to? So I think that's a good part of what you're responding to. Is that accurate?
That's accurate, yes.
But I'm also hearing that you're wanting, in the face of this judgment, that there's something in it, in your experience, that is this something that is a valid evaluation of you, of your inherent value of, as a human being. Can you look a certain way and still have a basic value as a human being? So that is a question. This is a question to explore, because I'm guessing the judgments is that you probably buy into some of the cultural judgments yourself, that it's bad to look old, it's bad to have wrinkles, it's bad to be a certain age, that you should be young, you should look young, and all of that stuff. So I'm guessing that you've internalized some of those judgments. And so there's a wanting to accept you just as you are, as what you look like, as your actual chronological age, and that you're just really longing for that. And I'm guessing that there's part of you that, I know that in me, and I see it in others, that you do, there's a comparing mind. You compare yourself to how other people your age look, and you look either better or worse than them. So there's the comparing mind to just observe as well. But underneath it for me, I think it's, in everything that we're saying, I think there's a part of it that's important for me, is just to simply recognize that this is the part of what I call the judging mind. Part of the judging mind evaluates and judges, and it's all part of a protective and defensive mechanism that prevents you and me and us from simply accepting what is without judgment. The tacit acceptance. This is how you are. This is your age. This is how you look. Can you feel the value, your inherent worth and value beyond the form, no matter what you look like? That's what, for me, the call for unconditional acceptance is. And it's not an intellectual thing. It's not the idea that you ought to accept yourself, but it's a true, deep feeling acceptance. Is anything that I'm saying helpful at all?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, great.
Yeah,
okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So I was noticing that a lot of the traits of the persona were things that we both valued. My partner and I, you know, I want to be seen as compassionate. You know, that's something I value, compassion in my life. But I also noticed that as a strategy, it sometimes is having the opposite effect of what I wanted. So if I had the persona to be accepted, but I'm using perfectionism, I don't make mistakes or I don't do anything bad, it actually kind of pushes people away. So as a strategy, it's like recognizing that the persona doesn't work, doesn't always
work. Yeah, I think that's an important distinction. I think that not only you, I think most people have, is that if I want to be seen as kind, that's different than being kind. If I want to be seen as compassionate, that's different from simply being compassionate. There's a value in kindness and compassion or honesty that we value, but it's very different than wanting to be seen that way, because very often, if we want to be seen a certain way, we may not be authentic. And so that's kind of a rewording of what I'm hearing you say. Does that fit?
Yes, it does.
Yeah. Yeah, so that distinction, I'm glad you brought it up, because I think it's really important, is that how we want to be seen often points to a value or a need, that when we live it, that's life enriching. That's wonderful. But when we want to be seen that way, the question is, am I being authentic and being true to how I actually am? Great.
I had an aha moment. What am I protecting? Why is it that when I get near something that I feel so terrified? I came up with a sense of being wiped out or annihilated. And I realized that in my childhood, 10 to teens, that I would say, oh, I'm perceiving the world in this way. And one parent or another would say, oh, no, that's not the way it is. It's this way. Therefore, I have not been able to trust in my own observation and experience.
Yes, yes, that's so key. I'm hearing you see this very clearly. You have an insight into this right now. And it sounds like what helped you to do that was ask yourself the question, what am I protecting? And that it came up with the feeling of being wiped out or annihilated. And that is really connected to an experience from childhood, but that still is in you right now, around such missing the validation and the confirmation of your own reality.
That's true. It's really important, I think, in order to go from my own vulnerability to myself.
Yeah. Yes,
to be able
yes.
to know that, okay, the fear is that I will be annihilated if I dare to cross into seeing what this feeling really is.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you for that. I think that is so true for you, and I sense it in so many people, this very same core fear of annihilation.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you for sharing that.
I sensed not only during this exercise but on previous occasions of doing this process that you're describing of moving, finding that vulnerable or finding that crusty edge, asking about what's vulnerable underneath that, moving into something warm and having some love, maybe some sadness too. And then there's a fear that comes in pretty quickly about the vulnerability of that, and clearly I know it points to that the world is dangerous. You know, it doesn't even seem to point so much to, oh, I've got to pretend really, really hard for other people, because so much of that has kind of fallen away. But
yeah.
Still, it seems like the vulnerability is so profound
yeah.
that it just absolutely has to be protected. And I'm not even sure how I may be going about doing that protection on a moment-to-moment basis a lot of times. But God forbid, whatever that wall is made of, that thing comes down. I mean, yeah, you can go visit there. That feels nice, warm, and fuzzy
yeah.
for a little while. And so whatever you might offer in regards
to
that again.
You know, I want to be able to offer something that's helpful, and yet what I'm hearing, I hear it is very profound in what you're saying. I hear the sense of that you are able to touch at some place, some underneath that protective edge, you can get in touch with the love and the sadness and some warmth. And then something happens fairly quickly, is that some fear comes up. And this fear, I'm sensing, is very strong. There's an intensity to the fear. And the fear has some sense of that there is danger, that the world is dangerous, and that there is something to be afraid of, and that protecting is something that you must do. Is that accurate so far?
Yes, very much.
So let me ask you one basic question. Around this experience, is there any part of your consciousness that wants your experience to be different, that wants that you shouldn't feel that the world is dangerous?
I know the answer to that is absolutely yes. And yet, it's very hard for me to access that because of the strength of the fear and the need to protect.
Yeah, I guess that's what I'm saying. When you feel the strength of the fear and the need to protect, is that okay with you to feel that?
Yes, yes, but just by myself in a very safe environment.
Yeah, okay. So there's something in this, I think, that I'm not sure I'm able to get it across, but it's a very sensitive practice to be able to enter into this fear, this profound fear, and just really pay attention to it. There's a deep honoring and respect in this fear. It's so strong in you, but to listen to it.
As you're talking, I realize that the more complete answer to your previous question about whether it's okay or not is more like a yes and no.
Okay. There's a part of it that's yes when you are alone and you feel safe. That's what I heard, the yes part. And then the no is, can you say?
Well, that's weak and pathetic.
Yeah, okay. I think it's important to notice that this emerged in your awareness, the kind of self-judging of this protection, how strong it is, that it's weak and pathetic, that you, maybe the part of it is that you ought to be not protecting, you ought to be unguarded, that you should be open, vulnerable, and in this other flowing, open state or something like that. Is there a part of you that views it this way?
Yeah.
For me, that's the part of the protective mind. The protective and defensive mechanism even shows up that way. It's a very clever part of our mind that does that. So the practice of self-compassion is something that I think requires a commitment and a patience to, that when this part of you that is so scared, is so strong, and you view that as a very innocent part that's scared and has been hurt and still carries that in him.
Mm-hmm.
Can you give the part of you that can be the compassionate witness and give the message in some way, not necessarily verbally, but it's okay to feel so scared and protected. You don't have to be any other way. It's okay not to be vulnerable. How does that resonate? Just with the initial suggestion as that possibility.
Sounds wonderful. Sounds like exactly what I would want. And it also, you know, as I was trying it out, verbally at least, there was something that also said, no, it's not.
Yeah. I want you to notice that what's helped me is the part that says, no, it's not, is the part that is judging.
Mm-hmm.
It's important that for me, my own process, to recognize that judging mind, that evaluative mind, will come in very, very often and speak. So,
yeah, it's very persistent.
Yeah, but just to notice it, and then can you just allow yourself to shift back into the compassion, the acceptance of this vulnerable part of you. So is that okay if we can complete this for right now?
Sure. Thanks. You've given me plenty.
Great, great.
I'm just sort of thinking about how does the persona can then become a bit like a feedback. As a child, I used my persona of intelligence and the good girl to protect myself,
yes.
And then I was recognized in class, the intelligent good girl. And if I acted out of character, you know, a teacher might say, what are you doing? You know, you're my good girl. So now it takes quite a bit of effort to actually recognize that and move beyond it.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad you said that because I think in my observation, that's exactly the dynamic. Because a persona often will take on things like competencies or skills as a compensation for wanting to be accepted and approved of. And it doesn't mean that these skills and capacities that are developed are somehow invalid. They're valid. If you develop intelligence, then you're intelligent. If you develop a kindness, then you act kindly. But that's not the test. The test is, are you being authentic? Or are you just putting out an intelligent answer because that's your way of being accepted?
Yes, that's where I'm trying to go with that. Thank you.
Great. Okay. Thank you.
Hearing whoever it was that talked about the tiredness of holding the persona in place, I feel that tiredness. And I want to put it down. And then as what Paul was talking about, the fear of annihilation. So it's kind of like I've gotten down quite a ways. So there's some authenticity that creeps out. And now I'm down to a place where, man, if I go any further, I'm just going to get slaughtered. But then when you said, is it okay to feel so vulnerable? What came to my mind was that would have been a question that I asked when I was born. Like, oh my God, what has happened to me? And here I am. And what am I going to do? That this vulnerability starts at a really early age.
Yeah, I'm absolutely with you on that. I think it does start at the very moment that we are born. I believe that it starts at an early age. We don't have the protective mechanisms at that early age, and they slowly creep in. But I think that we are actually vulnerable beings already, as human, no matter what age we are. beyond peeling away all the layers and all the veils of protection, we are facing life vulnerably, open, if we can allow that. So thank you for sharing that. Was there more? You were wanting something specifically back from me about that, or primarily just wanting to share?
I'm kind of digesting that. So it's kind of like you're saying we're always going to be vulnerable.
Yes.
If I want to be authentic, if I want to be who I am, by virtue of that, I am going to be vulnerable.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a question of, am I willing to be open to the fact of my existence? Am I willing to be open to the feeling tone of my nature, which is loving, which is creative? Am I willing to be open to that? Am I able to be open to that? So part of this process is the recognition of the fear and the guardedness and the protection, those mechanisms that are built into our system and that exist in us. It's about bringing awareness to that, but not just bringing awareness per se, but a compassionate awareness. So I'm going to just keep moving on instead of asking for a response from you. Is that okay with you?
That's fine.
So here's the primary question, one of the primary questions that comes out of this process of the recognition of our persona protection and the dynamics of it. And then the question is, well, what do we do with it? What is to be done when we recognize persona? And for me, the question is, what do we do self-compassionately with our own persona? For me, what I want to be clear is what I don't do. One of the things I don't do is I don't change it. I don't change my persona into something else. I don't try to get over my persona. I don't try to let it go, even. I don't try to do anything with the persona per se, judge it. But what I want to do is to bring compassion to the experience that I call persona, to the intensity of it. And compassion communicates allowing. You don't have to change the persona. You don't have to get over it. Even if there's a part of you that is tired, even if there's a part of you that feels the tension, the closed offness, the pain, the sadness of being operating from this persona, from this protection. So for me, this is the primary work, the primary practice of self-compassion with respect to this part of me whose legacy is the pain that I've lived through and the conditioning and the necessity at some point that was apparently to protect my very existence. That legacy lives in me as the protective part. So the practice is, can I unrelentingly bring compassion to the persona and empathize, sense into, listen to this part of me, listen to the longing and accept it unconditionally? I think it was important for me to make that distinction between the distinction of changing the persona versus unconditionally accepting it. That creates the space for the transformation of the persona, which is really different than trying to change it. So I'm hoping that what I just said was clear to you. And does anybody have any response to what I just shared? And want to know that it's landing, that you're receiving it in a way that's meaningful and helpful.
Hi, I just wanted to respond to what you just said, because I was trying to change my persona, and the idea of accepting it feels really sad and soft.
Great. I'm very glad to hear that. Just notice the immediate change, the shift in your experience when you try to change it and when you accept it. Thank you.
Robert, I think I would appreciate, further work on this. I was absolutely blown away by how powerful that sense of how important that persona is to me. I'm just really amazed.
Yeah.
So compassion, I get it. So that's where I'll stay for a while. I'm guessing there are more steps.
Well, I don't know that there are more. There might be, but I think stay with this one step more and more might be another way of saying it. Stay with this. If it's meaningful to you, if I understand what you're saying, is that what I hear in you is that this persona, how important it has been for you, and it is for you, how it lives in you, and to allow it, to accept it as it is, as it lives in you, without trying to change it. Yeah,
I'm totally on board with that. The part that I thought was maybe that I could do some more steps on is this part of me, the part that's being protected. Now I got in touch with that a little bit, and I'd like to be more in touch with that part that really is so worried. And if, you know, if the persona goes, man, I'm just in terrible shape. So I would enjoy being more in touch with that part that's just really scared that it's going to be revealed.
Yeah, okay. So that's the part of more deeper vulnerability, the part that's scared that it's going to be revealed. That's the part I think that is key here, the part that's really behind the fear, that the mind says that if I'm revealed that something terrible is going to happen, something like that. Does that resonate?
Oh, yeah.
And that for me, just to, now this might not resonate with you, but I'm saying this for you and for the rest of the class in a sort of precursor to our last class, which is at the heart of this, at the heart of what it is that we're fearing is what we most long for. Behind what we most greatly fear, I believe, if you can get in touch with this, is we just long to be seen and accepted just as we are, unconditionally. And when that is felt, that's felt as love. Just love, no matter what, One of the deepest needs in children is to have the child's reality confirmed. It's so simple, that as children, when we have the experience that our reality is not confirmed, is not validated, that what we feel, what we see, what our needs are, that we're told that it's something different than that, that we shouldn't feel what we're feeling, we shouldn't need what we're needing. When we're told that, that is the ultimate wounding. And what we most long for, the part of us that is the most tender, the youngest part, is we long to be seen and loved in our reality.
Yeah. Well, I'm complete. As complete as my incompleteness is.
So we have one final hand.
I'm imagining that the morning that I've been experiencing, I guess, a natural outflow of bringing compassion to the persona, which is like the protection that I identified was this need to appear invincible and okay and serious, and that it's covering a very tender and exuberant and innocent part of me that just really wants to be kind of out there and be safe being seen. And as I connect with that part and bring compassion to that part of me, so much deep sadness comes up. And I'm wondering if that's natural.
That resonates with me, and it resonates as I hear you share that. I think the sadness is a natural emergence of not having been accepted or loved or whatever, the loss of that. Does that ring true?
Oh, yeah, totally.
Yeah.
When you talked about the ultimate wounding of for the child to not have their reality confirmed and validated, my whole childhood was like flashed in front of my eyes because there was no confirmation and validation of many things.
Yeah. And so the healing is to allow the inner process, as you are sharing, allow the sadness, feel it. Because the ultimate healing for me is that when we can allow these emergences to open in our inner experience, then we can finally validate our own inner experience. We can bring value to our own inner life. We can do for ourselves what our caregivers were not able to, for whatever reason. This is self-care. This is self-healing.
That gives very deep meaning to my mourning process, that I'm validating my own inner experience through the morning.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And it looks like we've come to the end of this class. Thank you very much for this class. It was very enriching for me, and I hope that it was valuable for you all as well. So I'll say my goodbyes.